The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson on 97.3 Cairo FM. Welcome to Dory's Big Show. Let me tell you, before we get to the big lead of the day, I swear, just the top of the hour news could fit an entire show. Just hearing Governor Inslee say that, you know, he's got it handled for what could happen after the election, which, by the way, I don't predict anything here particularly, unless if Trump won the presidency, I could see Seattle freaking out, and you'd get the usual suspects in Seattle breaking windows and damaging things. But what else is new? I feel like that's just a weekend. But when he says he's not, you know, he's got it handled, he'll choose the what to do about the National Guard. What kept ringing through my ears was his assertion that he didn't even know about the chop zone. So, you know, when the guy's, it's one thing if a governor's super prepared and he's got this track record of great success and he says, you know what, don't worry about it, I got it handled. And you kind of kick back and say, I'm not worried about it, right? But if it's the guy who said, what, there's chop zone, Seattle takeover, I'm not familiar with that. You know, I'd have to get some more information 2 days after it happens. Then you start to go, okay, this person is, you know, since then he said he misspoke, that what he meant to say was that he was super informed. He just didn't have the latest up-to-date information about it. But, you know, let's just roll with the first one. Or it was, you know, what I think was a lie, and he just didn't know what to do about it. So same thing here. It would be better to know what the exact plan was given a set of circumstances. You know, and the other thing that's striking me is there's so many people out there that are acting like, remember the Citizens United case? I've seen it brought up just a couple of times of late. The left doesn't like to bring it up too much right now because they're busy trying to shut down conservative speech or speech right of center. You know, you've got the laptop scandal of Hunter Biden with the media and media allies and left-wing allies and Facebook and Twitter trying to shut down that conversation despite some pretty disturbing stuff. Some of which we'll talk about later. But you remember the Citizens United case was all about this video made, a movie made about Hillary Clinton. She didn't even win the nomination ultimately, you know. And so, but all this, it was like, oh my gosh, these conservative people made this movie, which how many people were going to watch it anyway, right? So they make the movie and then they say, well, how dare they not consider this a campaign contribution, a campaign issue? You know, we got to control this speech here, and they're obsessed with it. Well, you know, the lawyers for the film crew point out, hey, or the organization Citizens United point out, does this mean you should be able to control what books are presented and treat them as political contributions and control, you know, what's printed? And they basically said, yeah, sure. And since the Supreme Court ruled correctly in that case, the left has been harping about it and acting like, oh my gosh, you know, conservatives have free reign of media, which is just a joke. But I just wanted to point out, I've seen things on Facebook, on Amazon Prime, entertainment shows that are clearly designed to body slam the president and the Republicans. Maybe you love that, and I don't care one way or the other. I mean, as I said, in Washington State, we're a spectator sport and a wallet for presidential campaigns. Biden's going to win this baby at 8:01. No question in my mind about that. But, you know, so we can watch it. But still, I watch these things and I think, where's the outcry? Where's all this? We know that there's grave concern about the Hillary Clinton video that's lasted for over a decade now. And doesn't seem to be the same when it comes to all these other things. And there never is. Same with late night comedy shows doing specials. You got the Borat targeting, you know, various, Trump folks. And, you know, it just goes on and on. Comedy specials, you know, or sitcoms have lines in them, you know, specifically designed to deliver messages akin to the news. You got the West Wing reboot coming up. So anyway, I don't have a problem with any of that stuff. I do have a problem with the attempts at shutting down the other side. That's the dangerous zone. And I think there's a lot of that happening in a lot of different places. And they seem to think of themselves as the self-righteous arbiters of what is good and proper in terms of speech. And I think that that's a dangerous thing. All right, let's move on to the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
Hannah Scott is joining us now, Kairos Hannah Scott, to talk about Governor Inslee's press conference yesterday. He covered a wide range of issues, including some of the big ones. For example, the kind of a second surge that we're experiencing among college students when it comes to the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll start with that. Hannah, first, thanks so much for making the time on the Dory Monson Show.
You bet. Glad to be here.
So why don't you first give us a rundown of what's happening at some of the college campuses when it comes to COVID-19, and then just walk us through what the governor had to say about it and his plan of action.
Yeah, so we've been dealing with, and he'd been talking about for the last couple of weeks, these outbreaks at various colleges and universities. Of course, the UW, the big one, the last tally I saw was up to 300 people there who had come down with the coronavirus. And he said, I think it was a press conference last week, in one of his comments, said we may have more to say about possibly taking some action regarding that in the weeks to come. Because, you know, there's fraternities, sororities, a lot of the Greek system involved in where these are happening, and it's, you get younger people who aren't necessarily following all of the COVID safety protocols because they're college kids, and they've right. been trying to make the effort to deal with that. And I do believe the cases are going the better direction. I think the outbreak is getting a little bit under control, but Governor Inslee laying down the law for colleges and universities yesterday.
It will require masks at all times in living areas on campus, except when outside or in sleeping areas. Congregate sleeping porches will no longer be allowed, and no more than two residents are allowed to share the same sleeping area. Visitations need to be limited to five people from outside the same household, and common areas can have no more than five people in them at any given time. So, in other words, we can only watch the Apple Cup on these sites with five of your closest friends. And this is really maybe the most important thing here. When we do watch the Apple Cup, we just need to socially distance. We need to wear masks, even with our good friends.
And he made it clear this is very mandatory.
These additional restrictions are important, not just because we've seen COVID activity increase on campuses, but because we're seeing the same trend of increasing activity statewide, nationwide, and in some sense worldwide. This threatens our health, our businesses, our children's education, our livelihoods. So we need to get it under control. It's a part of a phenomenon called fall, people coming inside, letting down our guards, and having the infection take off.
Actually, this one is where he makes it clear it's mandatory.
This is a direct requirement that the state of Washington is requiring this of these facilities. It's administered not just through the universities. It is a direct requirement of the government of the state of Washington. And we have numerous enforcement tools should those become necessary. The isolation part is a requirement for the colleges to assist in the isolation, to make sure those isolation capacity is afforded to people, even if they live off campus. They do have the right to charge the Greek facilities for that, but they need to have a plan to help provide quarantine for their students.
So that's basically the new rules that he laid out there, again, very mandatory. And he says I'm not just hearing this from him in relation to the colleges and the universities. I heard this from other health officials yesterday as well regarding other outbreaks. Seems to be a lot of people in smaller groups who are, you know, closer friends who are hanging out outside of their homes, right? So they don't all live together, but they're hanging out together, not wearing their masks. And that is what's getting all the blame, much of the blame right now for these outbreaks.
Well, I'm curious about a couple. Well, one thing, I thought some of the rules were confusing. You have five people over to your house, your Greek house, and then in the common living area, you can only have up to five people. So you can invite your five friends over, and they'd all stand there by themselves in the common area. You know, I mean, there's some of the stuff that I don't think is going to pass the smell test of, you know, you're inviting people over, there's bound to be interaction, particularly if it's, you know, it's particulates. You know, I mean, if you're on a, is the air going to stay in one spot? I don't know. I mean, that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me. Secondly, I'm curious, what among the hundreds of students at the UW that have come down with coronavirus, COVID-19, what do we know about, or if anything, about how serious their conditions have been? In other words, you know, I mean, if this was an outbreak among older people, you know, like at a nursing home, it would be extremely urgent, I take it. But I'd like to know you know, when they get this, what's happening to them and how serious have their conditions been?
I think from what I've heard, and I don't have the totality of this for sure, but it's, you know, it's as it is with a lot of the younger people when they get it. There's mild, mostly mild symptoms or just positive tests where they don't even know that they are sick, that they don't get sick. But there have been a few who have had some, you know, longer, more serious illnesses. I don't know that anybody's been hospitalized, though. I don't think it's gotten that serious. But when you know, and whenever that question comes up, the argument is that there's other things that they are seeing as we're, I don't know, going on a year into this almost here in the next couple of months. More and more, they are seeing longer lasting effects from people who were mildly sick early on, as even in younger people who were mildly sick, who have lingering respiratory issues or often neurological issues, issues in the brain and in their organs that is not quite understood yet, as far as I can tell. So that's part of the reason for that caution when you don't see younger people getting super sick or dying or things like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Also, I'm not sure if you tell the fraternity row that, but I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounded like the governor was saying that they could be liable for these quarantine facilities. And I think that's a tough sell. I mean, if you're telling people, hey, you could have this huge expense, that's a strong, as a young person, you know, I'm guessing that that would be a motivator to kind of, hey, you know what, I've got it, but I'm just going to hole up in my room and, you know, with these symptoms and just tough it out because I don't want to cost a bunch of money that we don't have. You know,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I didn't get a chance to ask about that, but I was also wondering about that. And most of the quarantine facilities that were set up in various counties early on were not something where you charged people to go stay. That was what they needed to do under the county health, you know, order if they were sick and so that they didn't spread it. So I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work. You know, and how many of the people who aren't following the rules right now are going to follow the new rules? We'll see. I don't know.
I'm really curious why it is, and I'm not expecting you to have the answer here, but why it is that, you know, we're seeing news coming out of some studies out of, what was it, New York, I think, where they tested, you know, 28 infections, COVID infections out of 16,000 plus tests at schools that are functioning right now. And these are grade schools, so they're not living together. So I assume that there's some differences there. But it seems strange that you'd have, you know, quite that it wouldn't be possible to make these things, you know, happen and have fewer of these kinds of outbreaks happen. I'd be curious if there's lessons from grade schools that should be applied to these college things or what the reasoning is from health officials, why there might be, you know, a greater danger for the older, you know, college students than there is for these schools that are open in other places that are finding out that, you know, it's been relatively safe for them to do so.
Well, and there's a difference. There's research that shows that there's a difference in the kind of, younger kids, grade school kids, don't come down with it as often. And when they do, they definitely don't get very sick for the most part. But there is kind of an escalating level of severity and long-term effects is the belief when we get into your, even I think, six, like high school kids, right? That's why they'll be the last ones to ever go back to class in person in most states. And that's why in colleges and universities, most of these classes are remote. So that was my other question. Why are the, is the student housing even open if, you know, everybody's doing distance school anyway? And I didn't really get an answer, but, so there's just a difference, I think, between the age groups of kids.
Yeah, you bring up an excellent point. That's what I was wondering, too, is I thought I was just ignorant there, where I assumed that the UW was still shut down for the most part, you know, and figures the Greek houses would still be open, you know, always getting the special treatment. But now they've got issues. And I'll be curious to see if, you know, with them on Greek Row and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of shops and little restaurants and stuff in that area, that there's got to be some, you know, fairly frequent interaction in. I wonder if that will spill out into a more of a community outbreak or if it has yet. And again, you know, if not, I'd be curious as to the why, unless these students are being more careful than the ones that I see, you know, catching some companionship at the park near my house.
Right.
You know, they arrive in separate cars, and then you see them all these young people, you know, just all jumping into the same car to hang out, and then they depart, and you just think, do the parents think they're distancing or what's the deal?
No, I know. And this is what I was asking him yesterday, because here's what I've heard, and I've talked to a lot of health officials yesterday, too. It's getting very, very cold this week. It's coming up on the holidays. We've got Halloween. There's a lot of, you know, media messaging going out about, please don't go and have a big Halloween party. Don't, you know, hang out. And then we've got Thanksgiving, Christmas, all of that. There's a really, really big concern that all of that and people being inside with the recirculated air is going to be a problem. On top of that, we're seeing a really significant uptick in the cases here, especially in certain counties, that has some health officials very, very worried. Some who told me yesterday that we are in a third wave now, and nobody's quite sure, but it's the trend kind of globally. So there's a lot of concern about that. But I've seen people, and I asked the governor, I go, look, at the beginning of this pandemic, there was a few people who maybe didn't see COVID as a real big threat and didn't necessarily follow all the guidance. Now I see in the last maybe 6 weeks, a lot of people who don't. People go to, you know, they wear their masks in the grocery stores, but I see people gathering and getting together. I've been invited to things that I've chosen not to go to, but that they aren't wearing masks. They aren't social distancing. They're doing all the things they're not supposed to do, and now there's an uptick. So how are you going to stop any of that?
Yeah, I mean, there's, when he talks about COVID fatigue, and Trump is as well, it's definitely going to happen because people are social animals. They can't stay away forever. It's not the way we're wired. So we've got some big challenges ahead. And one more thing, speaking of Trump, did he find a way to blame the president at all here? Because I've noted that one of the things that people like to do is pretend like somehow the virus is, you know, is the prerogative of the federal government. I don't expect you necessarily to answer it, but there's always this kind of, and it's Trump's fault that it's here, you know.
Well, I think often it's the response. I definitely get what you're saying, and it's super political, and I hate that it became so political. I don't like into all of that. It's disappointing to me personally, but all of us who cover his press conferences, we usually have we're chatting, you know, with each other on Twitter or whatever in between, and we time to see how long it takes before he throws the federal government or Trump into the conversation. And I want to say it was maybe 7 minutes yesterday.
Well, that's longer than I expected, because as you point out, there has been some growth globally, and I'm wondering, you know, how do you blame that? Because you have, you know, growth in terms of per capita cases in a number of different regions throughout the world that are making the U.S. less and less of an outlier when it comes to COVID. But, you know, again, there's this kind of a habit now. It's either, you know, it's all the Democrats' fault, or it's all the Republicans' fault, or it's all Trump's fault, you know, whatever.
Or it's all a lie, and it's all going to go away after the election, right? So, I mean, it's all it runs the gamut, so.
I don't see this for a governor who was supposed to call a special session to get the legislature back involved, and that legislature is a Democrat legislature, majority, overwhelmingly so. You know, this is a guy who's made many statements about how concerned he is about the president, you know, taking too much power and being, you know, power mad. And here's a guy who just can't bring himself to bring the elected representatives of the people back into session, regardless of his duty to do so. So, I think he should take a long look in the mirror the next time he does this criticism. But let's go first to the car tab issue.
Oh, yes.
It's practically out of time. Real quickly, let's do
really
the car
quick,
tab
really
issue.
Really quick. Okay, car tabs. We got defeated in court, and yesterday the governor was asked about what he might do and support as far as giving some car tab relief. Here's what he said.
People's frustration is abundant. We ought to recognize that. I do believe we should be open to reforming the car tab system, but we need to do that in combination with the way to replace funds that would otherwise make it impossible for us to keep our bridges from falling the river and potholes taking over I-5 and keeping our buses running. I do believe that we ought to look at options to reform that system, answer the frustration of people in Washington, and at the same time find a way to replace that financial source that keeps our transportation system running.
Okay, Dave, I have to ask you. You know what that means, right? To replace that. This is all going to come to an income tax or a capital gains tax, I promise you.
Oh, well, he certainly dreams of that, but I think they'll use the education route on that. I think what he's hoping for is a miles travel tax, where they could put the GPS in your car. I think that's what he's going to float for this supposed car tab, you know, reform that he's talking about. But what I wanted to scream, and you're right, the capital gains income tax is another thing that they're saying, hey, our revenue has only increased 16%, but we had plans to spend 30% more, 25% more. What are we going to do, you know? That's,
yeah.
So you know, it's just absurd. I mean, it's a shame that there's not a greater competition between parties in this state, because we don't really see that debate. We get kind of one side of it. But I'll tell you, the thing that bothered me most here was when he said, we got to have this money because otherwise bridges are going to fall down. We're not going to have, you know, we're not going to be able to repair our roads and blah, blah, blah. I thought, that's happening now. You've got the money. Yeah. There's been no prioritizing maintenance. I mean, give me a break.
Anyway,
out of time, but Anna Scott, thanks so much for making the time as always. Appreciate it.
You bet, Dave. Glad to be here.
All right. David Bowes in for Dory Monson on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Dory Monson on 97.3 Cairo FM. Welcome back to the big show. And it's an honor to be filling in for Dory. There's a story in the Seattle Times that made me gag a bit. It's like a hit piece in favor of Chris Reichdahl for Superintendent of Public Instruction. It's in today's paper. The title, Sex Education Referendum Makes Ideology a Focus of Race for Washington State Schools Chief. And there's a number of things that make me mad about the piece, but one is, note that the sex education is the ideology, and that's what's making it a focus, not the fact that you had thousands of parents show up, an unprecedented number showing up in the midst of a potential pandemic, the day before the governor put restrictions in, showing up in the legislature, packing the hearing rooms multiple times, and remember how hard it is to get people to actually show up physically to these hearings, and, you know, and overwhelmingly saying, we don't want these mandates. Let the local districts decide what they want to do. We don't like what the agenda is here. We don't like the menu that you're trying to give us. And basically, they were ignored, and that loud parental voice was ignored. Then, in the midst of a pandemic, when you can't actually meet with people or have large gatherings, they managed to gather a record number of signatures to get this referendum on the ballot so that people could say no. You know, that is highly unusual, right? This is, and you can't just chalk it up to, oh, well, these prudes were just afraid of some sex talk. It's got to be a lot more than that. Washington State is just not known for a bunch of, we've got, a minority of people that would identify in the religious conservative category of politics. So this is about something a lot bigger, okay? And so, you know, again, it seems like the cultural and political elite, at least on the left side of things, which is, you know, the most of the power centers in the state, they look at it and scoff, and they're like, whatever. Now the paper says, well, this ideology is now the focus of the race for the school chief, all because of this. Well, I wouldn't just dismiss that as just ideology. It's a law. It's a push for programs that people didn't want. And it wasn't, you know, it's not that they don't want sex ed. You hear that over and over again. What they don't want is the kind of stuff that they're trying to push through this law. So the piece says, you know, it's a flashpoint in the race between schools chief Chris Reichdahl and his reelection challenger Maya Espinoza. It boils down to a single sentence in the voter's guide. The incumbent championed a sex education policy that teaches sexual positions to fourth graders. Now, she's boiling down the whole – the reporter here, Delilah Bazaz, is boiling the whole race down to that one sentence. The incumbent championed a sex education policy that teaches sexual positions to fourth graders. That's from Maya Espinoza's voter's guide site. Then she writes, the statement is inaccurate. The law requires school districts to adopt a sex ed curriculum of their choice that meets state standards. Translation, the state gives you a bunch of choices and you have to pick one of them. You know, it's like saying, hey, you just adopt the curriculum of your choice. By the way, these are the only ones that fit that bill. You know, so then that says the standards suggest that fourth graders learn about puberty, reproduction, healthy relationships, and transmission of communicable diseases. Espinoza's voter statement isn't referring to the law itself, but refers to a book listed in a handout for parents that could be used for further reading. The handout accompanies the curricula the state considers compliant with the standards. So in other words, it's supportive materials that go along with what the state is pushing. And by the way, that's only one aspect of the controversial stuff surrounding this. But again, the policy, the quote here is that the policy that teaches sexual positions to fourth graders. Then she says she's not quoting the law. Well, she didn't say she was quoting the law. She's quoting the policy. The policy has this as some of the additional reading and some supportive materials for the stuff that's being passed out. You know, does that sound like that big of a stretch? And by the way, you can see some of this stuff at the Informed Parents for Washington page. For how much longer, I don't know, because they got a lawsuit letter today saying you got to take some of this stuff down because our sex ed curricula is under copyright. We don't want people to see it because, after all, why should you parents know what's in there? But anyway, you take a look at that. In fact, I mean, I hesitate to read it, but listen to the absurdity of this thing, okay? This is one of the lessons, not for the kindergartners this time, but this is from this curricula that is now, they're saying, you got to yank it. There's too much of it on our website. You're violating our copyright. And so they've got this example of circles of sexuality. And it says, begin by reading the following description of someone's first sexual experience. It was dusk. The apartment was empty, save for the two of them. As they lay entwined in a warm embrace, this room, this bed, was the universe. Aside from the faint sounds of their tranquil breathing, they were silent. She stroked the nape of his neck. He nuzzled her erect nipple, first gently with his nose, then licked it, tasted, smelled, and absorbed her body odor. It was a hot and humid August day, and they had been perspiring. Slowly, he caressed her one breast as he softly rolled his face over the contours of the other. He pressed his body close against her, sighed, and, fully spent, closed his eyes, soon fell into a deep, satisfying sleep. Ever so slowly, lest she disturb him, she slipped herself out from under him, cradled him in her arms, and moved him to his crib. Having completed his 6 o'clock feeding, the four-month-old also had experienced one more minute contribution to his further sexual development. Okay, so the whole time, of course, you're meant to read this thing. It's supposed to be this hot, passionate description of sexuality, and it's breastfeeding. Okay, does that, is that the kind of thing you want your kids, is that how you want them taught sex ed? Does that sound good? It sounds absolutely ridiculous to me. But one of the program assumptions here is human beings are sexual from the time they're born until the time they die. Well, it's just an absolute joke. Anyway, so then the thing goes on and it goes attacking Espinoza for a couple of things. One of them was her supposed academic credentials. They said it's wrong in the voter's guide because, after all, she hasn't earned the degree she described yet. But what they don't mention is the voter's guide you have to turn in really early, right, in order to get it published, as the Lauren Culp campaign learned. You have to get it in really early if you want it published, and the degree is going, she's got, stellar grades all the way through. She has one more piece. It's being graded as we speak. So by the time the vote takes place, she'll have it, right? But you have a severe limit to the number of words you can put in the voter's guide. So is that quote-unquote dishonesty? It doesn't strike me as that. It strikes me that, first of all, it's not that big of a deal. I don't think most people vote according to the college degrees that you're getting. But secondly, it seems like, to attack her without noting that by the time people actually vote, the votes are counted, she'll have it, that also strikes me as absurd. But there's more. Anyway, it's a great piece if you love Chris Reichdahl, the guy who, as superintendent, his first concern when the schools were shut down and had to go online was that students might transfer to the state's already approved online schools and actually learn something, and the money might follow them. So he had to curtail that. David Bowes in for Jory Monson on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Jory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Welcome back to the big show. not used to that kind of bumper music, but it's pretty sweet as it is. There's been an arrest of 21 white supremacist gang members in Utah. Somehow I always picture Utah as a crime-free zone, you know, like just a whole lot of super friendly people. But unfortunately, Utah also has its problems. Should be a lesson to us all. You know, human nature is such that wherever you go, there's going to be evil, because we've got a fallen human nature. And at some point, bad people are going to make bad decisions and keep sailing down that bad river. Anyway, so in Utah, 21, this is a 16-month investigation where they arrested members of three homegrown hate groups: Soldiers of Aryan Culture, Silent Aryan Warriors, and the Noble Elect Thugs. Haven't heard of any of these guys, but whenever I read of such things, I wonder, you know, wouldn't it be interesting to see the path to, you know, be a fly on the wall and see what made some kid grow up? See, kids are innocent, they're having a good time, they're fun, they like each other, they don't, you know, they meet somebody at a park who looks different from them, they don't care, they just want to have fun together, ask to play, and yet they grow up to be soldiers of Aryan culture or silent Aryan warriors or noble elect thugs. You know, I mean, I'm sure it's bad parents, you know, that's my number one. So you wonder, you know, how did they get there? What happened? But they're stopped. 16-month investigation. Federal government. U.S. Attorney John Huber said at a news conference, you know, there are many things to be proud of in Utah, from snow to national parks to beautiful mountains. But white supremacist gangs, it's one of ours. We own it. We're not proud of it. They were accused of selling methamphetamines, heroin, painkillers, marijuana, and other drugs in the Salt Lake City and Ogden areas. They recovered firearms, about 15, and about a little over a pound and a half of meth during the probe. One of the gangs was born in a Utah state prison. The couple of things that struck me about this, one was, you know, the comment here at the end, FBI Director Christopher Wray told the House of Representatives at a hearing last month that within the racially motivated violent extremism bucket, people ascribing to some kind of white supremacy is certainly a big chunk of that, and they're among the top threats to U.S. national security. But, you know, this investigation has been going on for 16 months. I get some people on Facebook that I think have kind of jumped onto the derangement fringe area, like the lady we played the cut of yesterday was screaming that democracy is being lost because of, you know, the president. And you look at this and you say, wait a second. If the president were really plotting some kind of Hitlerian takeover and he was, you know, had a desire to support these kinds of groups, why would they be arrested in large numbers on a regular basis? I just want to point out those arrests are still continuing. They're still going. They're still happening. We should applaud that. That's a great thing. You know, it's a reminder. The president's daughter is Jewish. You know, his grandchildren are Jewish. You know, I think a lot of people who dislike the man want to, you know, they want to link it to some kind of caricature instead of the reality.
And, hey, Dave.
That becomes a problem. Yeah.
As a little tease to the next segment, we'll explain why we came in with the Avengers theme and you did a different story.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking it was Batman. I got it confused. That's why. Yes, that would have been better.
Avengers story next.
Okay.